This is National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. We are again at the home of Alan Kent in Mount Lebanon. This is Gabby Dinman, who will be doing the interviewing. Mary Harrison will be the recorder. And today is July 23, 1993.
This is tape four?
And this is tape four, side seven. All right. Alan, as we do each time, I think you remember, we go over the tapes and we want to fill in a couple holes before we go on. On your very first tape, you had told us that it was Roz who introduced you to practicing religion, formal religion. I think we covered that. But you also said she was the one who gave you culture. And we'd like to hear a little bit about what you enjoy doing with her and what you've...
Well, I've gotten to enjoy symphony, opera, and I've even gotten to enjoy going to art museums. I haven't quite made it to all the flea markets that she likes, but that's not really culture.
Oh, I don't know. Do you do you read for fun? I mean, for relaxation.
I started since I retired.
And what kind of reading do you like?
Oh, I've been reading Michener. Been reading. What is that book I just finished yesterday? I forget. Once I finish it, I forget. Mm-hmm. But some of the popular authors, and I'm back to reading. But I read a lot technically still. I have to.
We have to, certainly. The other thing we'd like to know a little more about are your girls. I think we have their names and their birth dates in one of the earlier tapes. But tell us from top to bottom about them, anything interesting in their early life, but certainly what they're doing now.
Well, the eldest, Meryl, they're married to. I gave you that data already.
I think so.
Yeah. She's working right out here on Green Tree Road with a CPA lawyer, and she doesn't have a CPA or an accounting background, but she sure learned it, that she's working essentially full-time at accounting, tax returns, things of that sort, year-round.
And who's she married to?
Pardon?
Who is she married to?
Mark Samuels is a dentist. He has his offices, the next building to where she works.
That's convenient.
Mark Samuels.
It's Mark Samuels, yeah.
And do they have children?
They have two children. The eldest is Micah, who we just saw last week. He came in from Atlanta. He had just flown a Huey helicopter from the West Coast, step by step, to the East Coast. He's a Navy pilot, and just a delightful guy.
And, how old?
Pardon?
How old?
He was 24 in January, and he's a lieutenant junior grade, and having a ball. Loves it. And then there's Tisha, his sister, who's 20, who has started out at Kent State, and she wasn't serious about her work, so she got dumped by Kent State, and she went to the community college, and has now brought her average up to the point where she can get back in. She doesn't want to go to Kent State, so she's probably going to get into Chatham.
Right.
And she's a nice kid. She's a beautiful little girl, short girl. She's working part-time in the Holiday Inn here as a hostess at a restaurant.
And they live in Green Tree.
Live in Green Tree.
Are they affiliated with Sangha.
They're affiliated with the same temple we are.
Okay. Are there any more children in that family?
Okay.
Now, number two daughter.
Number two daughter, Emily.
That's right.
Lives in Dallas, Pennsylvania, right outside of Wilkes-Barre.
Dallas?
Dallas, yeah. It's just north of Wilkes-Barre. She and her husband, they're both workers for the blind, for the intermediate unit, and they travel around the area, and they've been doing that since 1972, when they both got their master's degrees in special education with a specialization in working with the blind.
Where did they get that?
At Pitt.
At Pitt.
That's where they met.
That's where they met.
Yeah. And they just left yesterday morning with their two children. They're also consultants for the state to evaluate, both of them, to evaluate duly blind people. What kind of treatment they need, not medical treatment, but what kind of educational treatment they need. And they also were asked then to provide it on a moonlighting basis. So they do that as well.
I see. So that newly blind people are trained differently than people who are born blind, I would assume, because they have skills with the...
Yeah, they've got... Yeah. That's right.
That's interesting.
What is that?
What's the husband's name?
I'm sorry?
What's Emily's husband's name?
Paul.
And they're married?
Jaeger.
Okay. And number three, daughter?
Number three daughter is in Augusta, Georgia. She's Jacqueline, or Jackie, right, as we call her. And she had been assistant manager of Chi-Chi's in Augusta, and they just closed.
Oh, dear.
So she's happy that they closed. But she's also itchy to get back in September. And I don't know what this name is, but the ones that bought out Chi-Chi's is this Australian restaurant outfit, Outback, something like that. I guess they serve kangaroo stuff. Anyway, so she thinks they want her to continue there. She got her education. Pitt and Johnstown, major in English.
Is she married?
She's married to Matthew. It's interesting, we have as our son-in-laws Mark, Matthew,
Luke and John,
Paul.
Paul,
okay. Paul. And we've had one of our grandsons, Micah.
Oh my word.
What's Matthew's last name?
Pardon?
Matthew's last name.
Mariak,
M-A-R-Y-A-K.
Okay.
Mariak. And do they have children?
They have two boys, 10 and 8. The eldest is... Seth, and the younger, the 8-year-old, is Douglas.
How about Emily's children?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I just gave you Emily's children.
Right. Jacqueline's children.
Jackie's children.
Oh, excuse me. So these are Emily's?
Those are Emily.
Okay. I'm so confused.
And Jackie's children are Justin and Douglas. And Timothy, sorry.
And the ages?
10 and 8, same thing as the others.
Justin and Timothy. And
Justin is 10, Timmy is 8. And they arrive tomorrow at 4 o'clock alone on the plane.
Wow. Okay, so we're all caught up with the children.
Well, except for our youngest daughter,
we
Carolyn.
We have four, that's right.
Yeah, Carolyn has one daughter, Erica, whose chair that is.
She's a tiny one then, huh?
Yeah.
How old is Erica?
5.
Carolyn's husband's name?
Kim.
No, this is...
K-I-M. And Kim.
Last name is Kim. Carolyn?
No, first name is Kim.
His name?
His name is Kim. And their last name is Hall. H-A-L-L.
Thank you.
And she's the one who is now your administrative editor. Is that correct?
Of your
encyclopedia. Okay. Now, do you have any other children that we forgot about?
No.
Four daughters, right. I think we established that you were the king, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, the other thing I want to know a little bit about before we get back to your career, when you moved to Pittsburgh, where did you live?
Star Ridge Drive in Upper St. Clair.
Okay.
We rented a place with an option to buy. And we did it in a great hurry because I wasn't supposed to start till September of 1963. But they started to push on me to start coming in. First Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then Wednesdays and Thursdays, and then Mondays and Fridays, and suddenly I was here all the time. And Roz said, I'm not staying here. And we quickly took a place and moved fast, but without adequate time to look around. So we rented a place with an option to buy. And after 9 months, we decided this was not the environment for us. The house was nice, but totally Christian neighborhood. And we then quickly, because we had to make a decision then, rented another place on Parker Drive in right near here, and stayed there for 2 years while we carefully looked around, and then bought the house on Mayfair that we lived in until just a few months ago.
And what made you decide the South Hills? The fact that the university is in Oakland.
The South Hills. Well, we were the folks we met, and the vice chancellor with whom I was most closely associated, all lived in South Hills, and they called it the Pit Ghetto. And we liked the neighborhood, and we had a choice, really, Mount Lebanon or Fox Chapel. And somehow or other, we liked Mount Lebanon better.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's a nice place to
live. Very nice
live.
Place to be. Yeah.
Children were happy.
Yeah.
Good.
School was good.
No problems as no far problem. As yeah. Anti-Semitism.
There were.
Okay. I think we have now your whole personal life. Now what I want to know is, tell us about the growth of your department. You started it, essentially. So it started from nothing?
Nothing.
To what?
Well, do you know it started with nothing. Myself and a secretary in an office on the 36th floor of the cathedral.
Could you turn the machine off for a second, please?
Okay. So you were on the 36th floor.
Okay, and it built very quickly with grants and stuff like that.
You mentioned that, yeah.
And ran out of space very quickly. We got we rented space in the Webster Hall Hotel, and from there we there was a building called the NASA building that was built after I came, and we got a half a floor there.
Where?
On the campus. And
NASA?
Yeah, National Aeronautics and Space Agency. And the reason we got space there was because one of my major grads was from NASA. Okay, so we were there for a while, and then we ran out of that space. And it was about that time that there was serious discussion of building the Forbes Quad. And the question was, would we want space in there? Well, the answer was yes. However, there was no, from the time they say we're going to build it until it's available, it could be 5 or 6 years. So we decided to join with the School of Library Science in the AIR building. You know where the
AIR.
Do you know where the parking lot is to the Webster Hall.
Okay.
And right across the street was a building that used to be on stilts. Crazy looking building, but it's all been filled in now. You know, the church is on the corner.
Okay. Is that that small building?
No, not the small. No. That's,
that's not Channel 4, near Channel 4. I mean QED.
No.
Where QED was, it's the next one to QED.
The next one to QED.
Yeah. It's an 8-story building.
Is that the one that has a landmark, a historical thing right in front of it?
Not a historical. It's got a plaque showing what the school is, but not a landmark.
Okay. Sorry.
I still know.
Oh, the landmark is across the street.
It is, okay.
As you go up Belfield.
Okay.
On one side is the parking lot to the Webster Hall.
Right.
And immediately across the way is this building that has an indoor garage and in and out.
I know where.
Okay.
And that's called AID?
It was the American Institute for Research.
Right.
And that one, the school had taken some space in it, and then we decided to take space in it. And AIR was having difficulty in getting the contracts it expected to get in Washington in order to fill that building with their staff, so they were happy to rent the space. After a while, we needed more space, another floor of that, and they said, fine, but they're going to double the rent on what we already have. So the head of physical plant, a retired Navy captain, tough guy, myself and the dean of the school, met with the management of AIR, and he said, but they said, double the rent. He said, we will move, period. So I almost died, but, you know, because where were we going to move? We had no place to move. Well, the next morning, the dean of the school, Harold Blancourt, knew a vice president at Mellon Bank, who called him the next morning and said, what happened? AIR can't pay their make their mortgage payments. Well, that led within 48 hours to Pitt buying the building and renting space to them. So we took over the building. Now we have the whole thing. The place was filled. And after a while, gee, what was it? I forget just when it was. When a new dean was coming in, someone I knew, he and I agreed that we join forces, and my activity would become a Department of Information Science in parallel with the Department of Library Science as part of an overall school of information science. And it was a very healthy marriage. It gave a bigger unit, bigger bargaining power in the administration as far as budget is concerned. And we helped them a great deal because at the time that enrollments were dropping dramatically for library science programs around the country, ours was booming. So it helped them. Now we're still booming, but they've come back a great deal. So it's we claim to be the largest in the world as far as numbers of students.
Now,
how many is that?
Oh, excuse me.
Gee, I don't have the numbers now, but, you know, it must be in the... I don't know. I don't remember now. But we had reached, when I was there, we had reached 600, 700, something like that.
So now that you have that whole building, is your whole department consolidated?
Oh, yeah, everything.
And before that, you were at various places in the campus. That must have been difficult.
Sure.
Okay.
Still with the School of Library Sciences?
It's called the School of Library and Information Science.
Still is, so that's
right.
How many faculty in that division, department? What would it be called, a division or a department, or what would be the
there
proper
There are two departments.
One is
Information Science, the other one is Library Science.
Right, okay.
How many faculty?
How many faculty now, considering it started with one?
You want to turn it off, I'll
okay.
Pardon?
Logical that those two are would be a good marriage.
Yeah.
Okay, so how many faculty?
It's over 20. This is an
over
old list.
Over 20, okay. And
and 14 in library science.
So it is a larger department.
Yeah.
Okay. How many graduate students did you supervise in your career? About
it's at least 50 doctoral students that got their PhDs.
And you did mention, which I think is sort of, I hate to say fun, but it's so interesting, that you supervised PhD students.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have a PhD degree.
That's right.
Of those, were there any foreign students?
Yeah, perhaps a third of them.
A third of them were foreign?
Maybe 40%.
From just where? All over?
Name
or specifically?
Countries.
Well, are they from the, you know, I
all
always...
All over the world.
Iran?
Yeah, one from Iran.
India,
quite a few.
Africa?
Oh, Africa, yeah.
And Oriental, Nigeria, I'm sure.
Oriental.
How about Europeans? A lesser degree or more?
Lesser degree, awesome. But we have Norway. Mm-hmm. We've had a few from Germany. One or two from... Maybe one from England. France, two... I remember.
How about China?
Thailand, a couple there. One from the Sudan, incidentally. Let me jump to that. This woman is still the, as far as I know, the only PhD in this field in all of Sudan. All of Sudan. And she's become quite a celebrity. She's sent to UNESCO all over the world. And she sends me letters. Oh, nice.
How are these students funded? From the grants?
Typically by their government.
By their government?
Yeah.
And the American
students? Oh, by the way, Saudi Arabia, quite a few from Saudi Arabia.
Okay, they're financed by the government. How about the American students? Are they funded through your grants or the grants that you have?
Some through
grants. Or did they have to pay?
Some through grants.
By themselves?
When we were smaller, almost every doctoral student was financed to do research, mm-hmm. or something like that. Today it's harder. Some of them have to pay their own way.
How about, we talked a lot about grants last time, that you were so very fortunate that you had such bountiful ones.
Yeah.
Is that still so in this field?
It's much harder to get.
Yeah.
And there was a dry period, after I quit doing it. I said, it's enough, and someone else has to go after the money. And I guess I hadn't adequately trained the next in line to, how to be a salesman.
That's an art.
It's an art, yeah.
To request.
So there was a dry period of a couple of years, but now it's booming again.
Good. Okay. Do you want to tell us anything else about your professional career until the point of your retirement?
Well?
That we don't have on tape.
Can I look at that VF for a minute?
It goes to 86.
Yeah.
Because then we're going to get to your retirement.
Okay, the...
we have a lot of retirements.
Oh, I think the... one interesting thing was this period from... what were the years? For about 7, 8 years, when I was asked to take on not just the academic programs and the research center, but also the university libraries, to report to me on the university computing activities. So I had that as part of my empire.
Yeah. What was your title there? I guess it's in your CV.
It was director. Director of communication.
Of the whole
program.
Thing?
Yeah.
So you had a lot of administrative work.
Yeah.
Do you like that?
I liked it and I didn't like it. I didn't like it because of the time it took away from doing other things. And, I used to start work 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, come to the office and see students so that I could, do unproductive administrative work during the daytime. Anyway, I liked it for the power it gave to get things done that I wanted to get done. I didn't like the time it took.
Tell me something else about that period. I would assume, but I might be wrong, you tell us, did you have more interaction with other departments at the university?
I had to, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
You want to tell us some stories about interdepartmental issues?
Well, there had been a continuing controversy between our department and the computer science department.
Well, that was separate.
Pardon?
Okay.
You know, who's got the right to do this or that and all of that. And finally, the provost one time said to me, why don't you take over the computer science department and settle the issue? Well, they, as well as computer science departments around the country, were having great difficulties at the time. And I said no, and I think it was a sound decision, because the information science department, while it's got a lot of computing involved in it, is more a behaviorally oriented approach, the human-machine interface rather than the machine itself is the emphasis. So that was one thing. There we had a big flap with Jerry Zoffer at the School of Business. And I don't think we're civil to one another, but we were civil, but that's about all. We started a telecommunications program, and he thought it should be cited at the School of Business. And we had a big flap. I won that one, but that was a flap.
Are you still friends?
We never were friends.
I see.
I mean, we'd say hi and, you know, smile at one another and see one another. So it was at the point once, I'll never forget this, he was so distrustful of me that once, it was sometime in August when they had the furniture sales in the department stores, Ros and I, and I took a couple of days off, Ros and I went to buy a chair or something in one of the department stores, maybe Horns. And we went to the floor, 8th floor, whatever it is, and there was Jerry with an entourage, it was around lunchtime, going toward the executive offices, obviously looking for money or something. And he sees me, and I was dressed, you know, nicely. So he came up to me and said, what are you doing here? As if I'm approaching.
Oh, he thought you were, I see.
I mean, it was that, but I wasn't looking, I was looking to spend money. You know?
I see. That's interesting. Do the stores, like Horns, are they big givers to Pitt?
Well, I don't know whether they're big givers to Pitt, but a school of business, you'd expect them.
I see, I guess so.
With, you know, a marketing emphasis for some of their programs.
That's interesting. He was just interviewed by one of our teams.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll listen to that someday.
I might. That's interesting. Any other interdepartmental?
Yeah, I had a big flap with libraries from that time when they reported to me.
Well, sure, you stepped on their turf.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I got a very large grant to the National Science Foundation at the time to do a study of the use of library materials, and found that only about 20% of what was purchased was used more than once or twice, if ever. And this got a lot of notoriety, this study, all over the country. There were people ready to kill me.
I think you mentioned that in one of your tapes, but let me get it straight. They bought books? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
They really were not?
You typically buy at a research library for future needs, not for what is needed right now. You should have had it to be ready for research activities that are going to start. So how often are they correct? How often are they not correct? That's the issue. So it turns out they're not correct too often. And none of the librarians anywhere are that good at it, that I don't know that anyone can be. So the question was how to cure this problem. And some of the cures had to do with setting up networks of libraries so that you could share resources.
Right. Well,
one emphasized
sense.
This, one emphasized that. And, that was a terrible thing. But that has come to be now.
Right,
yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Tell me something else. Did you know or do you know Wesley Posbar?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any interesting relationships with him?
You know, I've chatted with Roz whether I should discuss this one.
Well, you knew it was coming.
Pardon?
You knew it was coming.
I knew it would be coming.
Do you want to turn the tape off for a minute?
Yeah.
Would you want to turn it off?
If you want to, we can talk about it if you'd like.
Well, what the hell?
I don't
know. You know, we had a grant. Sorry, the School of Library Science, the dean of the school, got a grant from the Navy to construct, to design and construct and stock several libraries in Saudi Arabia for their Navy.
For the Saudi Navy?
Saudi Navy.
Okay.
It was in connection with the U.S. having sold about 12 or 13 advanced naval vessels to the Saudis, which no one seemed to know about. It wasn't in the newspapers. But anyway, they had sold it to them, and they needed to train people how to use these ships. So they needed a technical library to back it up. A rather large grant was requested to contract. And in order to buck up the proposal, they wanted to put as many high-powered CVs in the proposal. So they wanted to know if I would be willing to have my name put in there. I said yes. Well, Cape Town.